Here to tell us a bit more about these changes, we're joined by Dr. Michelle Noon, a criminology and psychology lecturer at RMIT University. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, Michelle, can you tell us a bit about how the police force has kind of operated in Australia historically?
Oh, it's so interesting, the history of Australia and the police force. So, as you know, in our post-colonial history, we were a place for convicts. And what's interesting is that our first police forces were actually recruited from the convict class.
Right.
So originally, the people who served in the police force were people who had been very heavily policed back in the motherland, so the UK,
mm-hmm.
and then went on to sort of live that public service life here in Australia. What's also interesting is during that time, police were really, there were lots of, so today we would see, you know, one police person per thousands of people in our community, whereas now we're looking at, or back then we're looking at 1 to 5. So for every 5 people in the community, there was one copper. So really, really high proportion of police policing the community. And that proportion actually increased during the gold rush.
Right, yeah.
So we saw a huge explosion in the prison population, a real interest in policing, and bringing over a lot of those British models from the motherland to really, you know, bring in what looked like quite a militaristic process and prison and also policing system.
So it's kind of been around for a while.
Yeah.
Right. And so are we seeing, I suppose, more recently, a kind of, ramping up of this militarization, or is it sort of just the continuation of a process that's kind of been around forever?
Well, what seemed to shift a little bit in the 1970s here in Australia and also around the westernized world was a move to what we've called community policing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where there was acknowledgement that this sort of tough on crime, harsh policing methods were not particularly effective, and that it was more appropriate to work with the community to do effective policing. And this geared up in the last sort of 10 to 20 years, the last couple of decades, where we've been focusing more on domestic violence as policing forces.
Yeah.
So looking at what can be done in those situations, looking at post-immigration inclusion policies and what that looks and feels like for our multicultural community. And also around, you know, how we can have more diversity in policing practices. Because we know that more diversity in almost any workplace is a good thing. The diversity of thinking, diversity of personnel, that's been really heavily supported. And that's really strongly brought in this community policing component, as we call it, where we want people who have different sorts of less militaristic techniques for diffusion, negotiation, strategizing,
yeah.
And so on. So
yeah.
It has been a really big shift, and what we're seeing right now potentially is kind of going back to some of those old school ways of thinking.
Right. So if we look at police militarization, it can take forms like, you know, armament changes such as like semi-automatic weapons and different types of training. How does this equipment and mentality changes affect how the police interact with the public?
Yeah, so I think there's, you know, it's a two-way interaction and probably even a three-way interaction. So when people have the ability to use force, they're more likely to use force.
Mm.
So if that's sort of normalised in a community and normalised in a police force, then it's more likely to be implemented, which I think is a major challenge, a major issue. And then, of course, there's how, you know, the community respond to that. So we know that human beings respond differently to different kinds of communication strategies. And typically what we see in negotiation is that having someone point a gun at you is an alarmist behaviour.
Yes. Doesn't really calm you down.
No, it's about as effective as being told to calm down.
Yes.
When, you know, so what we're sort of thinking is potentially could have really negative impacts.
Right.
There's also a history here in Victoria in the 90s with policing where there was, perhaps you could argue, a very clear overuse of weapon use, where many people were at risk and some Victorians lost their lives at the hands of police, people who were experiencing significant mental health concerns and symptoms and were not sort of appropriately handled by the policing system that was in place.
Yeah.
Which has been a strong focus of coronial inquests and so on.
Yeah.
So I think there's also a potential risk that, you know, police are often working with and dealing with situations that aren't just crime-related.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be given the appropriate tools and strategies, which often doesn't include weapons, but includes you know, just how to work with other human beings effectively, and that being the focus to get good outcomes there.
Now, is there an argument, you know, for this militarization, I suppose, in a sort of separate branch of policing? So you have like a community policing style and then sort of a more militarized thing as a sort of, you know, an argument for it is future proofing against what might come in the future? Or is that sort of not something that's really what we're looking for?
I think that's like limited evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So, and certainly across the different policing forces across the country, there are different units that do tend to have a more tactical focus. So, you know, dependent on the sort of work that they do, and they're called in for particular situations, for example, sieges, or when there's a high profile person to be arrested, or, you know, organised crime situations to be diffused. So we've seen some, you know, really clear examples of effective use of those sorts of squads in those cases. But I think generally, you know, what we're seeing is that policing other people is most effectively done through acknowledging that it's a human interaction and that has better long-term effects.
Yeah.
And, you know, supports a lessened degree of recidivism for people not committing future crime as often as well when they have become engaged with the system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, generally, I guess it depends on what side of the fence you fall on from a criminological perspective and the reasons that you think crime occurs based on the evidence base. But certainly there's a strong position for a more community-oriented policing approach.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Michelle, to discuss it.
My absolute pleasure. I hope you have a great day.
You too.